Once these kinds of stones start rolling downhill, they pick up other stones until they get to the base of the mountain. There's not going to be a lender of last resort because these are totally unregulated markets.
This is Kaiser Johnson with Liberty and Finance, and this is the Miles Franklin Weekly Special for January 3rd through January 10th, 2023, while supplies last. This week we feature both of the only regularly minted 4/9 fine silver coins in the world. Silver maples backdated and silver kangaroos from 2022 at just $4.19 over spot. Both the backdated silver maples and the 2022 silver kangaroos are renowned for their purity, recognizability, and design. They both come 25 to a tube, and maples are 500 to a box, while the kangaroos are one of the most affordable boxes around with just 250 coins. We have both coins in stock and ready to ship, and both at just $4.19 over spot. And finally, both are IRA eligible. If you'd like to learn more about a precious metals IRA, call us, and we'll be happy to help you in that process. Our number for all orders is 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237. We're available after hours and on weekends, and we look forward to speaking with you.
Hey everyone, this is Elijah K. Johnson with Liberty and Finance. And back with us today is our good friend Doomberg, the number one Substack financial contributor, and surprisingly, a chicken. Doomberg, thank you so much for joining us today. And it's always a joy to see a chicken come on here on the show.
Elijah, happy new year, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Coming off a great first week of the year, and what better way to end it than another conversation with you. Always have a good time and looking forward to starting 2023 on the right foot.
First, if we can discuss the FTX scandal. I know we touched on this last time, and you had said that the contagion that would flow from that would really have a huge impact on the cryptocurrency sphere. We've seen that a lot of the cryptocurrencies still are quite below the levels they were before that scandal broke. And, you know, a lot of the prosecution that's been going on, people are saying, you know, it's not enough. What is your perspective as we've really seen this scandal unfold?
I think it's unfolding pretty much as we predicted last time we connected. Since we last talked, obviously, Sam Bankman-Fried has been arrested, and we've learned that his former CEO of Alameda Research, Caroline Ellison, I believe, was testifying against Sam Bankman-Fried and providing key evidence with another partner from the Alameda team. And I do think that the contagion, just this weekend, I suspect that we're going to see a resolution to the DCG Genesis situation. It looks like Genesis might be on the verge of filing for bankruptcy, according to reports. And there's all kinds of intrigue in the crypto world, but this would be the next domino to fall. For those that aren't aware, the Winklevoss twins have several hundred million dollars of client funds locked up in Genesis, which is run by the DCG Group, which also owns the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. And so we're seeing an enormous amount of contagion play out. These things take time, of course. Bankruptcy petitions take time to write and file. And once the lawyers get involved and the regulators get involved. But I think after that, if that does happen, and I'm not saying it will, but that certainly seems to be the next domino to fall in the great crypto contagion of 22-23. The next one after that would probably be Binance. That's the big offshore unregulated crypto exchange between them and Bitfinex, the last two big ones remaining. And then the big domino, the last domino, and the one that we think is central to all of the fraud in the crypto universe is, of course, Tether, the stable coin that is allegedly backed one-to-one with liquid U.S. dollar or U.S. dollar equivalents like short-term treasuries. We suspect that once the full history of this period is written, it all sort of circles around Tether, which is ironic because Tether's big competitor, of course, USDC is brought to the market by Circle. So I think we're going to see the next leg this weekend or shortly thereafter. What that means for the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is a whole other question. But I think largely as we predicted, things are rolling. Once these kinds of stones start rolling downhill, they pick up other stones until they get to the base of the mountain.
For those who are holding cryptocurrency, because I know you talked about it before, how, you know, FTX is not the equivalent of Bitcoin. So is this bad news for the cryptocurrency sphere, Bitcoin? Can we kind of be specific on what spheres is this going to impact and what spheres is this not going to impact?
A great question. So if we separate Bitcoin from crypto, the only sort of overhangs for Bitcoin that I see are, one, how does the massive discount to NAV that is currently supported by the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, how is that resolved? And the way in which that resolve could result in significant selling pressure on Bitcoin in the near term, which you could either be a risk to your portfolio or a buying opportunity. The other big overhang is, to what extent has the price of Bitcoin been manipulated by Tether, which, if Tether is in fact just counterfeited, could provide an artificial bid under Bitcoin. And so once those two things are resolved and we have a full washout of the crypto universe, then and only then will we get, I believe, an accurate price discovery for Bitcoin, which I would say is separate from the rest of crypto, for reasons I believe we got into last time. But until we see a resolution, it's impossible to say. You know, for example, if Binance or Bitfinex were to go under as exchanges, you could see, or if Tether were to be rolled up, you could see a rush of people trying to exchange their soon-to-be worthless Tethers into Bitcoin. And as priced in Tethers, you could see the price of Bitcoin skyrocket. And so it's a very fluid, chaotic situation, because if the price of Bitcoin is indeed, which is largely transacted by Tether, you know, if people rush to get out of Tether and into a safe haven like Bitcoin, at least comparatively, on certain exchanges, you could see the price of Bitcoin really explode. So it's a very dangerous time to trade. That's why we don't trade. But to the particular question, and back to the first question, the contagion has a lot more, you know, there's not going to be a lender of last resort, because these are totally unregulated markets. And so I don't see how, you know, Genesis survives. I don't see how the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust can trade at a 40 to 50% discount to NAV indefinitely. I don't see how Binance or Bitfinex, who are pretty clearly laundering significant amounts of money, I don't know how they can withstand this contagion. For example, Sam Bankman-Fried, of course, would probably look to cooperate for a lighter sentence himself. He'd be a fool not to at this point, if you ask me, considering the amount of evidence that the people that are testifying against him have already produced. And then that leads up the next leg of the ladder and up the next leg of the ladder. And all, the ladder ends, the last rung of the ladder is with Tether. And so if we are no coiners, we have no Bitcoin, we have no Ether, we have no crypto, certainly never would own any crypto. But if we were thinking about getting, say, a small allocation to a Bitcoin, we wouldn't go near it until all of this is resolved.
So even holding cryptocurrency or Bitcoin outside of the system, for example, like on a jump drive, you wouldn't touch it right now, given everything that's going on?
Well, it's the price that you're paying to get it, right? And so I have no idea how the price of Bitcoin is going to react to the full flush of the crypto community. As I said, it could go either way. It could, you know, the unlocking of the massive amount of Bitcoin that Grayscale owns and a liquidation of that to satisfy creditors could drive the price of Bitcoin to price levels that were even lower than before COVID. On the flip side, in the days before a full Tether unwind, you might see the price of Bitcoin explode. If I don't have an edge and I don't have a passion about owning an asset, I'm not sure why I would stick my hand in the blender here and hope I don't get caught. You know, it's, but that's just me. That's everybody's investment horizons are different. And that's just our view of the situation today.
And I know we've also seen the DOJ, you just reported on this, really moving to prosecute executives here. What is your perspective on that and how it's already played out?
Yeah, we put out a piece this morning called Unnatural Immunity, which highlights a shift in the DOJ's approach and emphasis that I think many have overlooked. They put out a pretty important memo a couple of months ago, a 15-page memo, detailing their desire to shift away from holding corporations responsible for crimes to holding individuals within those corporations, especially the executives who order the people to commit the crimes in the first place. And we believe we're going to see, as this potential bear market plays out and the golden age of fraud, as Jim Chanos calls it, that wave hits the shore, and we find out which companies are actually fraudulent and maybe, you know, fabricating their financials and so on. We pointed out in the piece that the conviction of Trevor Milton and Elizabeth Holmes marks, you know, a focus on the people and not necessarily the company. You know, Nikola settled and Nikola as a business still exists, but Trevor Milton is facing prison time. And if that becomes a trend, we're going to see that as crypto explodes as well. And the headline that broke after our piece was published this morning, and we were just talking about it a minute ago, is that the SEC is now investigating the venture capital firms who put money into FTX for their obvious lack of due diligence and care to their fiduciary, i.e. the LPs in their funds. And that is an escalation as well. And I think, you know, we went through an amazing era of fraud. And ultimately, price is the ultimate prosecutor. And as these things collapse, you know, these enforcement agencies tend to be much better archaeologists than they are detectives. But once the crime scene is pretty clear, they go about the task of bringing people to account and holding people responsible for their crimes. And I do believe we are going to see the beginning of a trend of the personification of corporate crime, which is the phrase we used in our piece this morning.
How do you see this all impacting other markets as well? Because as we move, you're saying it, at this moment, you're not going to be touching cryptocurrency. I know we have talked about precious metals in the past. We have seen quite a rally in the last couple months for gold and silver. Do you anticipate this to continue? And do you see a move away from cryptocurrency into other alternative currencies?
I think most of the fiat that was floating around in the crypto universe is gone. And people ask us, you know, like the total value of all the crypto coins as expressed in US dollars is far, far higher than the actual amount of US dollars floating in the system that can be extracted through the payment rails. And if you ask me to put a floor on it, I would say the maximum or a good estimate for the amount of fiat in the system is USDC's market cap plus the other stablecoin, I believe Paxos, that's pretty well backed by treasuries. The sum of those two, which is probably some fraction of the total value of what's in that universe, that's already been pulled out. So as it pertains to precious metals, to the extent that gold replaces Bitcoin as a safe haven at a time of crisis, and money that might have gone into that space is now at the margins flowing into the precious metal sector, that's certainly bullish. But I think more bullish for gold, and part of the reason why we're seeing gold catching a bid here in the new year is because central banks around the world seem to be stockpiling it and getting ready for a potential competitive currency to the US dollar, which is something I believe we talked about in the past. And our good friend Luke Groman has been chronicling, and Grant Williams just put out another great podcast with him called Shifts Happen, where he goes through his thesis pretty thoroughly. I'd recommend everybody go listen to that. So I do think the move in gold probably has more to do with global pre-positioning for potential changes in the way currencies facilitate international trade than it does for as a consequence of the collapse of crypto as a potential safe haven competitor to gold.
A lot of people out there seem to be confident that 2023 is going to be positive for the precious metals. We've seen that as we've mentioned, you know, in the last couple months, as central banks are accumulating more gold. Do you anticipate that to continue this year?
A very important thing happened since we last talked, which is President Xi visited Saudi Arabia, and his speech should be read closely by all precious metals bulls, because he outlines in very clear language, plain black and white language, that his intent is to collaborate with Russia and the oil producing countries to establish a new way to facilitate international trade. I would recommend everybody go read Zoltan Polsner's latest piece, which is really a 7-year summary of Luke Groman's work on the matter. A really fantastic piece, Zoltan from Credit Suisse, that covers all of this. And if those two brilliant thinkers are correct, the price of gold is going to be in for an interesting ride this year. Volatility will certainly be there. But we own gold. I should disclose. Of course, we have our own physical holdings, but we occasionally put an allocation of our investable dollars into Sprott physical gold trust, which is how we express a bullish view on gold in our own trading accounts. And we have a reasonable allocation of our portfolio towards gold now. It's not a stock recommendation. It's not, you know, do your own due diligence, but we are relatively bullish gold in the short, medium, and long term. And I think if the BRICS countries do make a move for a currency backed by commodities settled in gold, the sort of market cap that gold would have to achieve on a global basis would probably have to rise from here. Of course, all depends on the U.S.'s response to this and whether war breaks out in Taiwan and various other scenarios. But I think that is more that tail risk of upside is probably more responsible for moving the price of gold, as I said earlier.
Now, from your research on what the BRICS countries may be doing, and when it comes to this new reserve currency being gold backed or settled in gold, how much of it do you see gold being involved and other commodities being involved?
So I should say I'm summarizing the research of others, and I wouldn't want to take credit for their work. But Luke Roman in particular has been on this for many years, and we're big fans of his, and we're paying customers of his. The pieces have been put in place for a long time. So if you think this is a short-term event, then you're thinking that this will occur rather quickly. But if you've been looking at this over the long horizon, like Luke and his team have, you see that the pieces have been put in place since the beginning of the global financial crisis. And today in Shanghai, you can exchange gold. You could exchange yuan for gold. So there is a physical gold market where international holders of the Chinese currency can basically take the value out of China in the form of physical gold. And they have an oil contract. They have a gold contract. They have, you know, and again, if you, I've encouraged people to go read a speech, because the exact speech is never going to be summarized correctly in the Western media. And this is an example where Zoltan actually does cover it, but he's not sort of mainstream Western media. He's a bank researcher, you know, and puts out these amazing pieces once or twice a month. And you can find it on Twitter. You just search, you know, Zoltan latest piece, and it'll, I'm sure you'll find it. It's pretty amazing. He goes through each aspect of Xi's speech and then ties it to a modern consequence of that. And it was really, really well done. And then, of course, Luke's follow-up appearance on the Grant Williams podcast was really a must-listen as well for those who haven't yet heard it published earlier this week.
No, when it comes to the energy markets, I know this is very much tied into this, because something that has propped up the U.S. dollar is the petrodollar, you know, oil being traded in U.S. dollars. But this move by the BRICS to create a new reserve currency definitely seems to threaten that. And countries are even starting now to trade to buy energy in currencies other than the U.S. dollar. Can you expand kind of how the energy market ties into this new reserve currency?
In the energy space, and as you know, energy is life, and we've talked about it at length in previous appearances, you need, you know, energy producers need to know that they can store the profits of their energy production in a form that preserves their purchasing power for when they need it. Otherwise, it makes more sense for them to just leave it in the ground. And to the extent that after the global financial crisis in 2008-09, the US Fed has decided to focus inward and focus on the domestic impact of their policy, as opposed to keeping the dollar as good as gold for oil. Again, another phrase I borrowed from Luke. The oil producing countries then have a conundrum because of, you know, inflation and the weakening of the dollar, so on and so on. And there's lots of people who have an opposing view, and I just happen to believe Luke's work. But by and large, the reserve currency and the reserve asset, in this case, are functionally the same thing today, which is the U.S. dollar and short-term treasuries. And short-term treasuries is just another form of money, really. So the reserve asset is what needs to change almost more than the reserve currency in the minds of the oil and gas producers, because they need to be able to store these products in a way, these excess reserves in a way that preserves their purchasing power. And then for countries like China, who are net exporters as well, they need to be able to buy oil at their current reserve balance. And that's where the big mismatch is. So both, you know, the Saudis and the Chinese, in this case, would have a desire to not have the value of their reserves be in the hands of the whims of the U.S. Fed. And then, of course, the grabbing of the Russian reserves has freaked everybody out in this game. And we wrote a piece back while we were still a free newsletter called On the Cusp of an Economic Singularity, where we talked about the seizing of the Russian reserves is going to have major decades-long aftershocks, as both the Chinese and the Saudis look at that and say, are our reserves safe? Maybe we should swap those reserves into something that can't be seized. I don't know, like a digital gold, for example, that is, you know, that can be redeemed for physical at an appropriate window. So a lot of moving parts, a lot of counter arguments, U.S. military presence, Saudi's defense needs, China, Taiwan. There's all kinds of scenarios that can make this maybe just like the hopes and fantasies of a lifelong gold bull. But it certainly seems, if you read Xi's speech and you see the behaviors, you see India's behavior, you see Russia's behavior. Putin has been talking about this for a very long time. The signs are pointing to significant change. And then the fact that somebody who is as well-respected and has such depth of expertise of how the plumbing works that Zoltan would put that in writing and put it out under Credit Suisse's masthead, I think is a pretty important sign that the narrative might be switching here. And we're long gold. We're bullish gold. Doesn't mean go out and buy gold. It just means that that's our personal view.
Definitely. And when it comes to the energy market in general, we saw a lot of shocks to the system with the Ukraine-Russia war and many other events last year. A lot of volatility. What do you expect if you want to, what are the main things that you're looking for in energy in 2023?
Right now, in the short term, we wrote a piece last week, I think it was called The Winds of Gaia. And essentially, the only thing that matters right now for short-term energy is the weather. And Europe has gone through an incredibly warm spell, which is great, fantastic. It's allowed them to shave off much of the worst-case scenario risk that we were worried about correctly. They spent $500 billion to buy enough BTUs to get them, looks like to get them through the winter. Good for them. Especially here in the U.S., natural gas is in free fall because we're seeing unseasonably warm weather. Ironically, of course, you know, the price of fossil fuels is saved by global warming. But it is what it is. So the weather is the most important factor. That looks like some of the long range forecasts a couple of weeks out call for a substantial cold spell in Europe. If that plays out, we hope it doesn't, but that could stress the system in ways that few expect it today. And I'll just close this answer by saying the worst thing that could happen is the weather blesses Europe and they misconstrue good luck as intelligence and they learn none of the lessons they need to fix things for next winter. And then next winter turns out to be a cold one. And then, you know, they live to regret their inaction today. This reprieve from Mother Nature should be seized upon to correct the mistakes of the past, not to validate them. Unfortunately, based on some of the things we're seeing out of the sort of professional commentators in Europe, we doubt that those proper lessons are being learned.
And I know in the U.S. here, one of your latest pieces on Substack was about changes in the U.S. energy market, especially in people's homes. Can you expand on that and kind of the, climate change narrative that is pushing for those changes?
Yeah, we wrote a fun piece called A Home Near You, which basically predicted, and it's already being validated by some of the pieces we're seeing in the mainstream media days after we put that piece out. The words heat pump will be on every environmentalist's lips for the year. There's a war on the American home furnace. If you heat your home with natural gas, in particular, they're coming for you. They want to replace that with what's known as a heat pump, which is essentially a sophisticated version of an air conditioning unit, which can both heat and cool your home. After writing the piece, we've been deluged with emails from people who own these things and are bemoaning their inadequacies. We didn't really get into that in the piece. In the piece, instead, we just identified who was going to win and who was going to make a lot of money because of this government-sponsored environmentalist sort of bonanza. And you know, HVAC companies and furnace repair technicians and private equity firms are rushing into the space. And all the money that is being offered to consumers in the form of credits will end up in the pockets of these individuals, and they will make a lot of money. But 2023 is the year of the heat pump. You will see no shortage of propaganda to that effect. And if you have a furnace or you cook at home using natural gas, the environmentalist progressive ESG movement is gunning for you.
What is your perspective on how people can be aware and prepared for this?
Yeah, so we went into who was going to win. You know, I like made a joke that if you have a youngster in your life considering an expensive degree in a liberal arts school, you might want to get them into the furnace repair trade because they're going to be in high demand as people try to keep their existing furnaces running for as long as possible. You know, in the piece, we described how California has already banned the installation of new furnaces, not just in new construction, but in homes where the furnace breaks, you have to replace it now with a heat pump, basically. And the whole definition of what a furnace means and how to repair it, we believe is going to change. You know, so I would be stocking up on furnace parts, all kidding aside, but like you're going to want to keep your furnace running well and keep it in good shape and make sure it gets maintained because if the furnace is deemed to be irreparable and you live in California today, which is something we expect to propagate to other progressive states on the East Coast and perhaps on the West Coast as well, they don't want you to own and operate a furnace in your home. And so they will do anything they can to force you into a potentially suboptimal or inadequate source of heating, especially at the times when you need it the most, which is during cold spells in the winter. And that's also going to put significant strain on the electricity grid. So to the extent that you can prepare for long-term power outages in the ways we've described in the past, that's also should be top of mind. The whole objective is to electrify everything, but also to not allow for sufficient development of reliable electricity generation, let alone the transmission lines to get them to your home. And so if you replace your furnace with a heat pump, you're going to be more dependent on a less reliable grid that will be more expensive to operate and will result in even more CO2 emissions than the magical heat pump claims to be saving. But mostly we wrote that piece to have a little fun and to get on people's radars that the words heat pump will be all the rage in 2023. And every time you see a story attacking a furnace, attacking home cooking using natural gas, or praising heat pumps, remember that the green chicken told you it was coming.
All right. Well, Doomberg, we really appreciate your time today. If people are interested in subscribing to your Substack channel, we'll put a link to that in the description of this video. Any last thoughts before we let you go? And did you want to share with our viewers, what is the green chicken all about?
Yeah, great. Appreciate Elijah. Great start to the year. We are at doomberg.substack.com, 100% subscriber supported. So if it wasn't for the people willing to subscribe to our Substack, we would not be able to do this for a living. We're very blessed to be able to pursue our passion and to make a nice living for our families in so doing. So if anybody wants to head over to doomberg.substack.com, we publish 6 to 8 articles a week covering the full range of the things we've discussed here and on prior appearances, have a lot of fun doing it. And it's the work of our lives. And you know, it's truly a passion. And so it's really fun. And again, I always appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to you, Elijah. And I hope you and your family had a really wonderful holiday and have a really blessed 2023 as well.
Same to you, Doomberg. Thank you so much and God bless.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A+ rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has 0 complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we will let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within 1 business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bankwire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bankwire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be double boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Elijah, my brother Kaiser, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.